You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of January 8th, 2020. And warm up that microwave. It's time for 2019 leftovers.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Alvor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're the co-creators of ExperiencePoints.net, a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. We got one more leftover discussion from 2019, and then we're really in it. Then it's okay, fine, 2020.
Then 2019 is dead to us. We'll never talk about it again.
We'll never think about those games. They're not relevant to our larger social, cultural discussion. So
not political.
Move on. We last week talked about our Games of the Year podcast. That's always a fun conversation. Some surprises there, I think.
Yeah.
Today we're going to talk about some of the games that did not make our top three list, but we think are notable for one reason or another. That doesn't necessarily mean they would even be in our top 10 games of the year, of course. Yeah. But I think there's a lot to discuss. I mentioned last week as well that I thought the competition for the best games wasn't actually all that high. Mm. And I think this is a good opportunity to talk about why that's the case with some games on our list. Generally, I think, how many do we normally do? Three, five? We kind of bounce around a little bit.
Yeah, we bounce around a little bit. Yeah, I would say like whatever feels notable to talk about.
Cool. So I've got about seven or eight games on my list that I think are worth talking about. Okay. There's also a couple games, by the way, and maybe I'll mention these two up front. These are two games that I did not play this year that are kind of high on my list because I think I would probably have liked them.
Yep.
One is Disco Elysium. We talked about that in our Gamies podcast. A lot of buzz this year, especially for some of those darker themes. And then Fire Emblem Three Houses, just because I kind of wish I had taken on the task of teaching some wizards how to fight each other or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But outside of that, well, I guess actually, are there any games that were high on your list for games that you did not play last year that you wish
there,
you had?
There is one that after hearing everyone talk about it, I legitimately think it would have reconfigured my top three list, which is Outer Wilds. The Outer Wilds.
Sure.
My understanding of it is that it is essentially a Majora's Mask set in space.
Okay. Well, you know what? Why don't we start us off then? Because Outer Wilds is on my list.
Okay, yeah. Tell me a little bit about it, because I feel like it's just this massive gap in what I didn't play last year, and I'm wondering how you felt about it.
So Outer Wilds is this sort of brilliantly orchestrated, real-time mystery puzzle game.
Yeah.
Is how I would describe it. The idea is that Groundhog's Day style, you live, when you die, you live every day over again, starting from the beginning. And the basic premise is you are a little guy on a planet and you could journey to other planets and try to sort of solve some mysteries about the galaxy. All of the planets are very small and easily navigable, but there's a lot of depth and complexity to all of them. So numerous planets have winding labyrinthine sort of tunnels into the ground. And then on top of all that, the events happen in the little galaxy that you're in real time. Mm-hmm. So locations on one planet may not be accessible earlier in the day in the classic Majora's Mask style, right? Yeah. So maybe the best example are there are these two planets that are essentially an hourglass where sand from one planet falls into the other. And you can explore the depths of the first planet earlier in the day, but later in the day it fills up with sand and certain places become inaccessible, while the other planet that originally had the sand becomes more accessible as the day progresses.
Right.
So the result is you end up dying over and over and over again, navigating the world, trying to figure out what is the ideal sequence of events for you to go and solve some of the answers that you might have. There's one world in particular that, in my mind, was the most striking, and it's this planet that is just being bombarded with volcanic activity and asteroids, and it's literally just crumbling. As soon as you land, the world is falling to pieces in basically like hexagonal things. And the first time you fall into the planet, it reveals just this gorgeous, like underground sort of crystal structures that are keeping the world barely together.
Right.
And it creates a lot of wonder, and it's a really exciting experience. the problem that I had and the reason it didn't appear in my list is that I never quite got over the frustration of having to repeat time and time again the same events in order to navigate that world. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like if you've ever gotten those complex puzzles that you might buy at like a gift shop, you know, that are like cool and you got to twist things and move a box to then unlock the other thing. It's kind of like that where I have a lot of respect for the way that it's built. I think it's marvelous mm-hmm. in that it's functional. But I think if you are the type of person that can deal with the frustration of having to loop over and over and over again, then you're going to love this game. But if you're kind of like me mm-hmm. where you're just not in the right mind space to commit that time and be okay with that constant repetition, it'll be really frustrating and ultimately feel like a burnout.
Do you feel like it can be, assuming you know how the entire world works and how every planet works and where everything is and so forth, could you finish the game in one cycle?
Yeah, I think the game is actually, there was a speed run in which they completed it in 12 minutes.
Wow.
I have played the game for several hours. I'm definitely not that far.
Right.
And I certainly couldn't, but yeah, of course. And between runs, it keeps a log of what things you know. Mm-hmm. Even that map, though, is a little bit vague. So, like, if you take time between play sessions, it really is not helpful, for example. Hmm. You could, I guess, theoretically figure it out, but...
I still want to play it. I mean, Majora's Mask remains like one of my favorite games, and this just seems like an extreme exploration of that concept. Yeah. And also, I mean, I like the idea of it's a space game, but it seems like it's a space game in which people who are kind of in the analog age somehow made it to space.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so it's just kind of a unique aesthetic to it. And so I still would like very much to play it. And hopefully, you know, maybe in the early months here, I can try to get through it. Because it really, I just heard a lot of stuff about this game. And there are people talking about how it could be, it's like one of their favorite games, period. And I was like, man, that's like pretty high praise for any year, you know, like let alone, you know, just an end of the year thing.
I mean, it's fascinating, but... It's so finely crafted that it's one of those things that's like, if you're not into it, you're not into it.
You know? Right.
Because I've seen Outer Wilds top a lot of people's favorite games of the year list.
Yeah.
And I've also seen it not appear on other lists of like top 20 games of the year.
Right. Big swings, basically.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's completely change tracks and talk about Battle Royale. My favorite okay. Battle Royale of the year. Tetris 99, baby.
Oh, I thought you would talk about this game. I actually thought Tetris 99 might be in your top three of the year.
It was close. If we had expanded it to reach a few more, I definitely would have put Tetris in there. But, I mean...
Man, if you love Tetris 99, you're going to like Outer Wilds. Because you clearly have patience.
It's also just the most classic, trolliest Nintendo way of getting into a genre. Where it's like, oh, like the Battle Royale shit is heating up. We have a stable of legacy franchises, beloved the world over. We could make any sort of Battle Royale. Let's bust out Tetris.
I mean, I love the idea. Like, this is Kojima level wild. You know, where it's like, what if we take Tetris and the genre of Battle Royale and combine the two together?
I will say that I had some foresight in that I jumped on this train early because, as I suspected, as the year wore on and I continued playing Tetris 99, for those that haven't played it, it's a game in which you are matched up against 98 other Tetris people. And you're all battling each other and dumping garbage blocks on each other when you create rows. That game got progressively more savage throughout the year.
Yep.
Because people are just savage at Tetris. They're great at Tetris.
And I think we mentioned in a past podcast as well, but they patched in a higher tier of play to basically make room for noobs, right?
They even call it, They even call it something like Gaiden mode or something like that. I mean,
only for the true samurai.
It's only for people that have won a match. And I've never won a match. The closest I ever got was, I think I got to 2 or 3 one time or something.
Wild.
But I mean,
that's cool though.
It is hard to beat. I mean, Tetris is as close to mechanical nirvana as you're ever going to get in a video game, and multiplayer Tetris is its own special hellish pleasure, and combining that all with the added meta layer of, oh, I should be strategic about who I knock out, because if I knock them out, I get their badges, kind of the same way if you knock someone out in PUBG, you can loot their gear. It's a surprising amount of there's a surprising amount of battle royale convention loaded into Tetris.
And levels of interactivity that, I mean, I guess people have been doing playing competitive Tetris for a while now, but you can choose to screw people over and change how you prioritize who you screw over to be a little bit more tactical. I mean, in a weird way, it almost has similarities with something like Teamfight Tactics, you know, in the sense that there are all these battles going on along simultaneously, and you could sort of inadvertently influence people. At this point, how many times have you won?
Oh, never. I've gotten to probably...
So you're not in the Gaiden group.
No, I can't even access that. I mean, I can routinely... In the early days, I could routinely get into the top 10. And then as the year wore on, that continued to drop and drop and drop.
I love the idea that you could sort of track statistically how much better the remaining player base becomes and how you are failing to match.
Because I definitely wasn't getting better at Tetris.
Well, cool. Real uplifting then. Great.
I mean, it's great. It's also one of those things where I think they've done a lot of cool things around, you know, daily challenges, or... they have funny skins where, you know, if you fulfill a challenge, there is a skin that basically reskin the entire game in a Game Boy aesthetic. I mean, it's cool. Like it whatever team is working on that game inside of Nintendo, I think understands a little bit of how the modern multiplayer internet works more than the mothership, you know?
Yeah, of course. Totally.
Yeah.
All right, so I will take us from Tetris to the stars. I'm going to talk a little bit about Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order.
Oh, yeah. I wanted to play this game, but I was scared off a little bit because I heard it was a little bit technically rough. I was waiting for a patch.
It was technically rough, and I'm here to say, Scott, they patched it.
Nice.
They did actually end up fixing a lot of the bugs that I was encountering. At least it seems that way.
Uh-huh.
I was at a point with this game where I was about to walk away. It had...
Right.
Hard crashed on me, I think, 4 times, and I lost a bunch of progress. It was very glitchy. There was a lot of loading issues. There's still some weird texture issues with a lot of the game as I'm playing it. And to be fair, I haven't heard all of these complaints coming from people. Maybe my particular PS4 Pro is busted in some way, shape, or form. I don't know. What I can say is the game has gotten better as I played it along. I gave it another shot. And I'm actually really enjoying it. I think it takes a while for Fallen Order to really find its feet.
Mm.
I think it's really not until halfway through the game when you get a little bit more insight into the overall story of the protagonist Cal, as well as some of the side characters around him and their position. I think the time it takes place within the Star Wars universe after the Jedi Purge, but before... the new films, is a really interesting time frame. I once did a Star Wars RPG, like a D&D session that took place in that time period also, because I think it's fascinating, like the way that the Jedi are seen across the galaxy.
Yeah.
And this game recognizes that a little bit. And then also about halfway through the game, you really start unlocking more of the Force powers, and they add a lot of flavor. I really wish that they had moved some of the abilities up and the diversity of ways of encountering a particular combat, move those powers up earlier. I think it might have made you a little bit more overpowered in some of the combat, and maybe that's why they did it. But I think the game really shines when you are just, you know, a fully loked out Jedi, you know, just like force choking people left and right. That's super interesting. I haven't quite finished it, but I do think it's worth playing. It's much better than I had originally talked about on the podcast and around. And I think if you do get a chance, it's definitely something worth checking out.
Respawn, right?
Respawn, yeah.
So it's so cool to see them try something that is not, I mean, I don't mean like just a shooter, because I think their shooters are the best in the business, but something so different than what they tend to do. I think that's cool to see them branch out.
It's also a game that's great, I think, for people who wanted to try the Soulsborne series but couldn't quite acclimate, because it borrows so much of it, but it's still very accessible in a way that the Soulsborne series admittedly isn't always.
Yeah.
And certainly the community isn't always. Also, the more and more I think about the new Star Wars film, the angrier and angrier I get. It's nice to be reminded that...
Embrace your hatred. Well,
I think, even while watching the new Star Wars film, which you and I talked about extensively and on how god-awful it was, both hated it.
Yeah.
There is something so instantly appealing about the Star Wars universe. You know, like you just, even in this movie, when I went in with low expectations, I hear a piece of John Williams' score, or you hear the sound of a lightsaber turning on, or you hear the crackle of a comms system, right? Or even the sounds of a droid beeping, right? Yep. I get like emotionally charged when I hear those sounds, because it's not just all this nostalgia that I have, but I think that the world that George Lucas sort of accidentally created with his team is fucking brilliant. And there's space to tell really great stories in there. And I don't think Fallen Order is necessarily by far it's not the best game of 2019, but it's nice to spend some time there in a way that doesn't feel like it's forced hackneyed bullshit in the way that the new Star Wars film is.
You know? Well, and regardless of how you feel about it, it's, for the most part, it's new characters. It's not just a bunch of like stupid fan service. I mean, it's trying to tell a new story, and whether you like it or not, you can at least respect it for trying to add something to this universe.
And it's independently positioned in the universe, you know, like there's not all of these ham-fisted callbacks to the film, you know, it's not trying to be a tie-in game. And I think it's so much stronger for that. You know, there's no, Rey does not show up. Luke Skywalker does not. I mean, at least as far as unless they pop up towards the end, like it's not loaded with callbacks.
Yeah.
That's really refreshing to be reminded that we can tell stories in that space that don't rely so heavily on nostalgia.
Yeah. Agreed. Cool. All right. Let me throw a completely unrelated game out there. Baba Is You.
Oh god. Okay, so this is the game that I forgot I really wanted to play. Baba Is You, so high on my list. I just need to get it. It's on the Switch. I'm just dumb and need to bite the bullet.
Well, if you feel dumb now, wait until you play Baba Is You. Yeah.
Baba Is Who? Okay.
It is it is one of those games where when you solve a puzzle, you feel like a genius, and then you'll just run headlong into another puzzle where you're like, well, I just must be an idiot and I should stop playing this game immediately because I'm just embarrassing myself. I mean, it's for those people that haven't played it, it's basically a tile puzzle game. It's a very sophisticated version of, one of those, novelty pocket puzzles where you slide tiles around to make a picture. You have to slide tiles around to get to a flag. You, in most levels, you start out, you control this
Baba,
this little creature called Baba, but all of the text on the screen form arguments and rules about the puzzle itself. So, for example,
and they're composed of blocks that are movable.
Correct. Imagine, everything is a 1x1 square. And for example, the word is a 1x1 square. So you can move the word is around, and Baba might be a 2x1 square. And then you can say Baba is, and then you move it next to a word like tree. And then all of a sudden Baba turns into a tree. So it's like every logical argument that you construct impacts the puzzle and how the mechanics work. And so the whole point of the game is to get to the flag. The flag is the thing that lets you out of the maze or ends the game. But most of the time it's like, okay, how do I get Baba to this flag? But you get into situations where it's like, okay, well, if I've changed it so, rock is you, and then the rock touches the flag, I've solved the puzzle. It doesn't matter that it doesn't matter that Baba hasn't touched it, because Baba isn't you anymore. And so,
do you ever get in a scenario where you write flag is you?
You can, yes. but then you have to touch it to one of the other things. You have to move it around and then touch it to something that will end the level.
I see. Okay.
So you can get yourself stuck in logical inconsistencies and basically one button.
I feel that way every day.
Well, I mean, yeah, that's 2019, baby. But you can then, unlike 2019, there is a button to basically rewind every step that you've taken in the puzzle all the way back to the beginning if you wanted to.
Right. So, oh God, how I wish I had that power.
I mean, it's really just this thing of, you know, there is an answer to every puzzle. There's not much of a fail state because you can always take your steps back either one step at a time or just totally reset the puzzle. It's super inventive. I know it's been floating around in the independent scene for quite some time, and it was super cool and fun to play. I didn't get even close to finishing all of the puzzles, but every once in a while I'll take a look and, you know, chip away at one of them.
Right. Yeah, that's on my list. I'm gonna have to play that pretty soon, I think.
Yeah, it's very cool. Good on the bus because it's like, you know, you can play one puzzle and be done with it.
Exactly. Okay, I'm going to talk about one, and we can talk about it quickly because we did a whole podcast about it, but I felt really bad that it wasn't on the list, either of our lists, and that's Sayonara Wild Hearts.
Yeah, it did not feel good.
This was probably the last game that I culled from the top four.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if I had top five, it probably would have been number four of the of those three that we had mentioned.
Yep.
It's just such a fun game. It is beautifully constructed. It's got a gorgeous soundtrack that fits so well with the actual action of the game.
Yep.
I played through the entire game in one sitting probably three or four times.
Yep.
And then also a handful of puzzles over and over again, either just because I liked the fucking song and I wanted to just slam to it, you know. I think playing it can feel as though you're participating in a dance. And I think that's really underrated. You know, you can play something like Just Dance or Rock Band, but I guess maybe Rock Band is the closest connection, actually, where playing through the music feels as though you are creating it and part of it.
Yep.
I think that's very well realized. And there's a lot of rhythm games, you know, like Thumper, for example, where the music is the backdrop to the action and it feels rhythmic, but it doesn't feel like a form of dance.
Mm-hmm.
This one does. And I think that's just a standout. It's just a standout experience from 2019.
Yeah, it's kind of, I mean, you can clearly see the inspiration of games like Rez or, you know, even older rhythm games. And it's just, the thing I appreciated about it most was that it tells its story efficiently. And you're in and out in, you know, 60 to 90 minutes or however long it takes, as if you were listening to a musical album. And you get the whole thing from back to front, and it all feels cohesive in a way that something like that game company game might feel. And the aesthetic of it is amazing. I thought it was great. Yeah.
And Queen Latifah's in it. Waifu and Queen nominee Latifah's of the
what's
year.
Not to like?
Did she win? Did she win?
Win what?
Waifu of the year.
No, that was Mama.
Oh, right, Mama. All right, well, fair. Sorry, Queen Latifah. Next year. All right, what else you got?
Let's talk about The Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening.
Ooh, if we must.
I had never played this game when it came out on the Game Boy, and I'm actually kind of glad because I feel like it was probably a better experience playing it now because I could see where the controls and just the overall, I was impressed by the game thinking about it coming out on the Game Boy.
Mm-hmm.
That's what this game, that was one of my main impressions. And then
like,
I was,
man, that game must've been really cool back in the day.
Well, yeah, I mean, cause like, I think it's a middling Zelda game. It's a top down Zelda game. If you like those, you'll probably enjoy it. If you don't like those, it doesn't have the cross appeal of something like Ocarina or Breath of the Wild or something. But sure. If you like Link to the Past and it's one of your favorite types of games, this is probably something that you'd really enjoy. I love the aesthetic. I thought they did a lot of cool things with it, but I was surprised by just how old some of the things felt in it.
Yeah.
And even so, I enjoyed it, but I think it's just because I personally enjoy those types of games.
Yeah. I mean, I'm with you. I applaud the effort. Not for me, but I could see why it's something worth checking out.
How far did you end up getting into it? Do you remember?
Oh, I would say maybe like four dungeons deep.
Okay. I mean, that's halfway or more, I think.
Yeah, I think it was probably about halfway.
By that time, you've seen most of the map. I mean, it's not a huge game.
Yeah, there was maybe like a quarter of the map left, if that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would be interested in it, Link's Awakening, similar to what happened with Resident Evil this year. They're kind of remakes, but they go further than that. And I think it was cool to see Nintendo not just, you know, oh, we're going to make it look like Link to the Past and call it a day, but they actually did change some things around in addition to the huge visual upgrade. And I think it's kind of cool because we are going to see more and more of these types of things as games get more and more expensive and they have to bank on IPs that are recognizable to people. I think we're going to see like more and more of things like Resident Evil 2. I mean, hell,
Disneyfication of video games.
Totally. I mean, we're already getting the Resident Evil 3 remake. I mean, I think, you know, what would Super Mario Brothers look like with this treatment? You know, I mean, I think there's just a lot of games out there that could go through something similar to this, which is like an enhanced remake.
Augmented,
you know? Totally. I mean, and this was augmented. Like, they changed some things around. They definitely changed and improved the controls. You know, that I think the augmented remake is only going to get more prevalent as we go into this next console cycle.
For sure. Cool. All right. I'm going to name two back to back because I want to talk a little bit about why. Those two are Telling Lies and Eliza. So Telling Lies is the follow-up game by Sam Barlow, who made Her Story, and also the sleeper hit Silent Hill Shattered Memories. And
I forgot about that, man.
Yeah,
what an underrated cult classic.
What a great game. Telling Lies follows the same format as Her Story. You have access to a computer and you're basically watching live actors perform in videos, and you're basically just navigating through the video. It's not nearly as strong or as poignant as Her Story is. And one of the things that we talked about when we talked about Her Story was that it was kind of a marvel that that game could exist at all, that you could take these fragments of a narrative and create a compelling story for the player that has senses, can create a sense of pacing despite the fact that you don't necessarily know how they're going to navigate that space.
Yes.
Telling Lies is proof that that formula works, but also it's just as hard as we thought it was, because it's not as good and it fumbles in a few places specifically because of that. But the story is still strong, the actors are still really good, and it's just hard not to want to recognize that game this year for at least trying it. You know, there's just not a whole lot of contenders in that space, and I didn't want the year to wrap up. I guess it has wrapped up, but I didn't want the year to wrap up when we moved on without calling out Telling Lies. And then Eliza is a narrative game by Zachtronix. Funnily enough, they're the folks that made Space Cam and Infinifactory.
I was gonna ask about that. I was like, aren't those people like really hardcore systems driven developers?
Yeah, it's bizarre. When I realized that, I was like, what the fuck? Matthew Burns, who we both know and have met in real life, was also a co-creator of Eliza and I think the lead writer on Eliza. And Eliza is basically a game set in the near future where there are therapists that are AI automated, but they have a human read out the AI prompts, the machine learning prompts, essentially to add a veneer of human to human contact between you and the therapy bot, if you will. It's a really touching game. The writing's really strong. The voice acting is really strong. I wanted to talk about those two games in conjunction because out of the games that we chose this year, outside of Death Stranding, I didn't see a ton that really sort of ventured more into the sort of serious narrative angle.
Yeah.
Outer Worlds has great writing, but it's very heavily leaning on the comedy and satire. And I think, generally speaking, we call out at the end of the year, oftentimes our lists are games that did really interesting things narratively speaking and had some really strong writing. I don't think this year I was as strong as last year in general, but I think these two games both stoned out as games that try something a little bit different. So if you are into storytelling games in particular, I think Telling Lies and Eliza are both worth your attention.
Well, I think there's something... I think both of us have a tendency to reward earnestness, even if it's not completely successful.
Yeah.
Because it is really easy to make a tongue-in-cheek or satirical game and be like, wink, wink, how funny is this? I mean, I think in some ways it's harder to make a really earnest game because it can come off as trite or hackneyed or
yep.
just try-hardy. But I really enjoy the effort when yeah. a game does that because there's some sort of like vulnerability to that.
Well, and especially something like Eliza that tries to be a little bit more topical. I mean, in a way, it's almost like a better Black Mirror episode.
Yeah.
You know, where Black Mirror gets really sort of like computers are bad, and you're just like, okay, buddy, like calm down.
Yeah.
Right. Right? But like, you know, right. We are not that far off from, you know, we have plenty of robots, messenger devices, and apps that we interact with on the daily, right? Like
right.
our Echo devices. Right. I talk to on the reg.
Right.
So it's not unimaginable that one of the ways in the future that we deal with a mass sense of postmodern, late capitalist malaise is
right.
with AI control therapy, you know? Oof. And I think it plumbs that conversation and the character who you lead really well.
Huh. Well, maybe I'll pick my last one since we could go on for a long time
yeah.
about this, but I'll pick my last one because I think there's a thematic tie-in to that conversation around earnestness and what is a satire and what is a commentary and so forth. And that is Untitled Goose Game.
Yes.
I think the more I think about Untitled Goose Game, the more I'm actually kind of irritated at the general discourse of the internet around Untitled Goose Game.
Sure.
Because, I mean, I obviously the game has comedic bits in it, but I don't really think the game is winking at the camera that much.
No, I agree.
You know, there is a restraint in that game. It's people lump it in with something like Goat Simulator, but it is so far from that.
Yep.
And there is its comedy is actually earnest and understated in a way that the whole discourse around that game wasn't. And I felt like it was actually, and I'm sure it didn't hurt the sales at all. It seems like that
game
did
I was going to say, I think that's heavily it's basically like a marketing angle that they took and ran with and was
yeah.
almost too successful. I mean, maybe it wasn't too successful for their own good if you're thinking purely in terms of sales, but I think in terms of the conversation, the comedy angle of like geese being shitheads did kind of stampede over
right.
some of the more interesting, maybe some of the more interesting critical commentary
yeah.
maybe that could have surfaced about the game.
And I think that's why I'm not super broken up, because it seems by all my perception is that game was pretty successful for an indie game.
I think they said they sold 1 million units.
Wow. That's
just
fucking
amazing. Crazy. Yeah,
yeah.
Amazing.
And so I don't feel as bad lamenting the critical response or the lack of critical response, because I actually think that game actually is fairly tasteful and interesting in terms of how, I mean, when Ian Bogost is writing about your game, you know you're doing something interesting.
Yeah.
And I feel like for every Bogost article, there were 1 million memes on Reddit talking about ha ha honk honk, God, it's a goose game. And it's like, yeah, that's all well and good, but it's not a super zany game. I mean, I would even put something like Katamari Damacy as like zanier and wackier than that.
For sure.
And Katamari is a pretty earnest game. So I just, there's a certain level of somewhat quaint silliness to this game that I think got overblown in a way that didn't actually serve it well. And I was actually much more pleasantly surprised by this game. I expected this game to be a bombastic mess, and it's more just kind of a mischievous adventure.
Yep. Yeah, totally agreed.
Yeah.
Great game. Really, really glad I played it and finished it. But
totally. I was thinking about it in terms of, you know, would I put it on the game, but a murderous ape took its place on my top three.
Fair. Totally fair. All right. Well, I think that wraps us up.
Cool. It was a super interesting year. I think my prediction for 2020 is that it will be a similarly interesting year, because this year, at this time next year, we will have new boxes in our houses.
Yeah. Oh, God. I thought this day would never come, and I don't know if I'm like excited or trepidatious.
It's weird. I mean, it is. This generation has been, you know, unusually long because of the kind of half-step consoles and just the overall pace of the industry. And
yeah,
I think there will be a lot of. I think it will be a mixture of a lot of the stuff that we saw this year. People will be kind of gearing up and waiting to see what these new things are going to do. But also we're going to have to, you know, there's going to be some big releases, especially around new hardware time. So I think it will be another unusual transitional year that will find these interesting games in a, you know, it'll be an interesting year in a different way than like, you know, oh, God of War was amazing, but that's like a very traditional way of being a cool year. I think this will be a more untraditional year in video games.
Yeah. I was thinking about movies recently because I was putting together my like top 10 films of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the thematically speaking, there's been a lot of films this year that have been sort of reckoning with the class divide and a sense of privilege in the U.S. in particular,
right.
Like Parasite, for example, or Us as another example. And I was thinking about in relation to games, like it didn't really feel like a whole lot of games were, and maybe just I missed some. I guess Kentucky Route Zero is wrapping up soon. Like maybe that's going to do it. But
wow.
It feels like this year has, I know, dude, 9 years.
End of an era. Yeah.
Can you believe that? But my thought was like, it feels like games in 2019, outside of a few cases like Eliza and Death Stranding, have not really felt as relevant to this day and age, if you will.
Huh.
And I kind of just, I wonder if that'll change this coming year because maybe games are just a little late.
Right.
Or I don't know. Maybe that's a different podcast conversation.
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe with a little distance we'll be able to see, oh, was this just an accident of development time or is there some other, you know, bigger thing happening? I mean, you know, not to be a corporate shill or whatever, but I mean, we have another Watch Dogs on the horizon and Clint Hawking is involved. So, I mean, you gotta...
Scott, Ubisoft doesn't make political games.
Yeah, of course not. But I mean, you know, a game where anyone and everyone could be anybody seems like there will be a lot of political discussion about how technology plays a role in our lives. And
yeah.
I mean, it just seems like there could be
Cyberpunk
a couple games out
Cyberpunk is coming out
there.
This year and Last of Us 2 is coming out this year. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, we'll see if it was just a fluke of development or if there is actually, you know, some other trend, you know, escapism versus engagement or something like that.
Next week, are we talking about 2020, the games to come?
We are going to, we're going to look through the release dates that we know about and talk about what games we're looking forward to and which ones we think we'll be spending time with. So I'm excited about that because I really haven't been...
goodness.
Other than a few, I haven't been paying too much attention to it. So I'm interested to see what's out there.
Final Fantasy VII.
That's one that I know. And it's already... I'm already frustrated at myself because I've mentally signed myself up to play that game, regardless.
I know, dudes. I'm exactly in the same boat. It's a sense of resignation. Like, fine. All right, fine.
Yeah, I'm already going to play this. You got me. I don't like it. I don't even necessarily want to, but I'm definitely going to do it.
It's kind of like how... I don't know if you ever did this in college, but did you ever sign up for the research studies where they would give you like $20 for like 3 hours like with shit taped to your head? It's like that, where it's like, I've already signed up, I need the money, but fucking frankly I don't want to be here.
And now I have a third ear in a place that might surprise you.
Donate your body to science, everybody. ExperiencePoints.net.
Oh, yeah. ExperiencePoints@gmail.com is our email address. We appreciate you listening each and every week, and we'll be talking to you next week.
Ciao.
Every time.